Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Redbox Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. On today's episode, we bring you part two of our columnist focus group, your favourite Times writers giving us their view of the world.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's turn our attention then to Christmas. How will you be celebrating Christmas? It's Christmas Eve when we're having this chat on Times Radio, sort of. What does Christmas look like? Alice, I seem to remember from the focus group last year, you were going to slaughter your own cockerel. Is that right?
Well, I'm not allowed to, actually, but it does make a huge noise at about 4 o'clock in the morning. So one of the other siblings, the youngest one, is the one who has the cockerel and the chickens. In fact, there are now three cockerels, which is the big problem, because we bred some chicks and they all tended to be boys for some reason, which I hadn't really clocked that what you do with extra cockerels, but they are now all wandering around. So one of them may have to be lunch.
Liz, who's got the hatchet?
That is the point. I don't think I wasn't quite sure even how to do it, I have to say.
Are they all as noisy as each other? Or does one become the noisy one?
No, they're all pretty noisy, I have to say. But then they were all fed on Weetabix. We weren't quite sure what to feed chicks on. So they're pretty massive now, actually. I think they're bigger than this.
So they're kind of Boris Johnson.
You know what? We had got, the worst thing we got this year was we got the... We were trying to have some baby lambs. So we got the really big Exmoor ram that was called Boris because it lives next to Boris's farm on Exmoor. We got it up and we put it in a field of 20 of our sheep. Very nice female ewes, very pretty, very good looking. And he refused to go with more than one of them. He was completely...
Absolutely. And then jumped the fence and... all the ones on the other side.
All he would do. Anyway, he was completely useless, blank shots the whole time. So that was a disaster. So that kind of put me off that. So we haven't got many lambs this year, I'm afraid.
The rabbit's currently going round and round on a ride at Peppa Pig World. Rachel, what does Christmas look like in your house?
Well, it's also my son's 18th birthday, my oldest son. So we will be celebrating that for a lot of the day, I think. More of the day than normal. So normally he has a sort of very small... tea party sometime at about 4 o'clock when we pretend it's his birthday as well as Christmas. But I think this year it might have to be slightly more dominant.
He'll be able to have his first alcoholic drink.
Well, obviously, exactly. We'll be remembering how, as he was born, they were playing sort of terrible Santa Claus is Coming to Town and a really badly tuned in radio on the hospital operating theatre because he was an emergency caesarean because he was upside down. And all the nurses had angel wings on their back because it was Christmas Day.
God, it was all scripted by Richard Curtis, wasn't it?
So it'll be champagne for breakfast and lots of presents for Will.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Now, come on, David. We all know that Christmas in the Ivanovich house is like a Richard Curtis film.
We were supposed to be going to Florence. That's all I can tell you. So it's a kind of therapeutic day as we try to get over a sense of loss.
You celebrate Winterval, don't you, David?
Do you know what? I'm going to say this. Right, I hate all these bloody things. I love having the family over for great big cat family gatherings. I love that. I really enjoy it. And we did one, you know. But things where people says it's all, we're all going to do this on the same day, and we're all going to feel this about it, and we're all going to sing this song, and we're all going to look at that film, etc. It makes me want to hurl, frankly. It really, really does. And I don't mean that as a kind of, you know, Christmas humbug. It means kind of you sort of downgrade all the other kind of great moments and the business of actually being together in favour of the kind of formulae that you use. It's a bit like the difference between, let's say, the Queen as a person and the Queen as narrated by whoever's doing the coronation.
David, what did you do growing up? Did you sing the red flag basically at lunchtime?
No. I lay in a sleeping bag reading the paperback version of The Lord of the Rings. That was my best ever Christmas. It was great. New sleeping bag, new edition of Lord of the Rings.
Danny, as you've chipped in, what does Christmas look like?
Well, he doesn't celebrate Christmas, does he?
No. Exactly. I mean, look, basically, being Jewish, it's like we don't get up in the morning and go, hooray, the birth of Christ. But as David says, you know, because we're at home with all the children, it's always a very nice day. But it can be a bit odd, you know, not being involved at all in Christianity at Christmas, because although everyone says, oh, the Christianity's gone out of it, actually there is still quite a lot in it, and it can be a little bit odd. And I also remember sometimes people think people start sympathising with your poor children because they don't celebrate Christmas, but they do celebrate other things. So it is a slightly weird occasion.
Melanie, what does Christmas look like in the Reed household?
Well, this year it's going to be very quiet because my son can't get back till Boxing Day. And so we're going to have champagne and we're going to have sort of Sainsbury's turkey Christmas dinner, because the Boxing Day will be the proper turkey. So we're going to have absolutely easy for me. And then I'm going to bury myself, because I too associate reading good books with Christmas. I bought myself The Fall by John Preston about Maxwell's decline.
Oh, thank you.
Because it's the sort of book I just really want to get into, because I'm one of his pension victims. And so I'm really looking forward to that most of all.
Very good. Right, you should be reading one of Libby's books. Libby, what does Christmas look like in your house?
Well, normally we are kind of Christmas central, and you know, Paul cooks for about, you know, 15 to 17 people and make a family around, and you know, I stick on the now that's what I call Christmas, and I sing along with Slade and Wizard, as people should, because there's a big sort of lump of the family heading off to America to newborn grandchildren they haven't been able to see and so on. So It's basically we're sort of, it's just the three of us, and so we're zooming off down to my nephew's. My nephew is newly married in his first house, and his wife wants to be Christmas. And I think it's a very important moment where you kind of hand over the, yeah, it's Christmas, I am Christmas, come to my house and I shall be very drunk because I don't have to drive anywhere, Christmas. And suddenly you're kind of handing it on, you know, and on Christmas night we shall drive right back up to Suffolk very, very quietly. Not having been drunk, at least not all of us having been drunk, and we'll have sort of handed over Christmas, and I think that's a lovely thing to be able to do, and it may come back to us next year, but it may not, you know. So it's kind of different. Meanwhile, in the run up to Christmas, of course, I just go to every available theatre. I feel I must support the theatres. They are having a terrible time and having shows closed and everything. And I've staggered the other day. I was supposed to be going to Life of Pi, and I had a ticket for it, and I was going to go. And it suddenly at the matinee, it was closed down and they'd been off for a few days. And so I thought, where should I go? And so I ran to the Palladium and found there was one £25 seat in the stalls, because it was all sort of isolated. And so I was there watching all complete bloody nonsense in the Palladium, which I have to say is almost exactly the same show as they did last year, only with added Donny Osmond. And, you know, you don't really want to add Donny Osmond to your Christmas cake. But It was fun, but I'm an audience. I'm an audience. I am supporting the theatres. You know, they need us.
And, I think somebody should explain to Danny who Donny Osmond is.
He's up and coming, Danny. Because
Danny's not a Christian, and he may not know.
Well, we sing, so we all sing Love Me For A Reason.
The idea that I do not know Poppy Love or The Twelfth of Never is an outrage.
I see you rather more as a Marie Osmond fan.
Yeah, I'm more a Wayne, I would think. You know, Little Jimmy, no.
Of all the places I thought this was going to go, Danny's in-depth knowledge of the Osmonds.
Well, it's interesting because Alice is just thinking David Cassidy, but she's not saying a word.
Yes, exactly. No,
I think she's thinking David Cameron.
Oh. That was very Sasha Swire of you.
I tell you what, if you were buying presents for a politician, then you can pick the politician. I won't ask you for specifically Boris Johnson or Keir Starmer, but that's probably not a bad place to start. What would you buy them, Libby?
I'm going to buy Keir Starmer, Now That's What I Call Christmas, the huge double album, because that's got Slade. He needs Slade. The man needs, you know, come on, feel the noise. He needs some, you know, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day from Wizard. He needs Fairy Tale of New York with all the insults, you know, that he ought to be throwing at the Prime Minister and never quite manages to. So that's my present for Keir Starmer is a loosen him up. No, that's what I call Christmas. And I'll go around and have a bop with him and say, just let it go, Keir. Let it all out. I know what you feel. Let it out.
Keir Starmer letting it all out is a worrying mental image. Melanie, what would you buy a politician for Christmas?
Well, I was thinking of Keir too, who is, you know, as I said, decent, but he does need to get a bit livelier. And you know, there's an amazing book. It was a couple of years ago called The Curious History of Sex. I think it would, you know, he could enjoy that. It would be good for him.
David, go on then. What would you buy one of them for Christmas?
If there were a way of doing In the Manner of the Word as a board game and so on, or something like that, then I probably would buy that for Keir Starmer. In the Manner of the Word, for people who don't know, it is, everybody knows what the word is, but you don't. You're sent out of the room. And then you've got to go and back in and ask them to do something in the manner of it. So my late mother once gave birth lecherously during Christmas Day, which was, I think, is a kind of memory I will never, ever forget. And I think the Starmer family doing that so that he was forced to do a kind of series of activities, I think that would have the effect that Libby's trying to get at without having that horrible noise, which she likes so much, but which other people find rebarbative. And if that's a very long-winded way of answering, it's because I really, you gave me no notice of that question at all, and I hate it.
Excellent. Thank you, David. Your points have been noted. Alice?
I would say both Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson a haircut, actually, because I know it shouldn't matter, but I still, every time Boris gives one of those addresses to the nation, which he has given just now again, he just doesn't bother. And it really upsets me because I know that my dad, although he has dementia, would be really upset that he hadn't bothered to brush his hair. And I think Keir's got too perfect hair, alternatively. He needs a proper cut that kind of takes off some of the
so true
weight of it.
Danny?
Well, you know that thing where you ask people what they want, and in the end you end up giving them money. I think I thought I might do that with Boris Johnson. He seems to need some money. And I thought maybe I would buy it, put it towards his wallpaper, or he could buy himself a desk light or something like that.
It's the Brownlow option.
Yeah. I would, this time I would tell him who it was who was giving him the presents so that he knew. But I think that would be my present.
Very good. Rachel?
Well, I think we can have a Christmas film moment and do a Wizard of Oz set of gifts. So we can have for Boris Johnson, Keir Starmer will give him some courage, like the lion. Boris Johnson can get a heart, because I'm not sure he's got one. And I'm not sure, who should we give the brain to? I thought maybe we could give the brain to Rishi Sunak, because he's going to need it. He is quite clever, but he's going to need every brain cell he can get over the
what
next.
What about Priti Patel? Because she hasn't got one, do you think?
Yeah, that's true. She can have the brain. Okay. Although she could do with a heart as well, probably.
Actually, she could do all three, couldn't she? All three.
Could Rishi have the little red shoes?
Yes.
Yeah. He likes them.
I think they fit him. Then he can fly away, click his heels together. I think I'd actually think Liz Truss would be in the red shoes, though, wouldn't she? Definitely for the photo op. She'd be in the Dorothy dress, dancing down the yellow brick road.
Perfect. Another mental image that everyone will be scarred with all over Christmas. Finally, then, I wanted to ask you, we've looked back on 2021. Let's look ahead to 2022. Where will we be in a year's time? Who'll be Prime Minister? Who'll be Leader of the Opposition? What will have happened? Will there be anyone left in the Cabinet? Will anyone left working at number 10? I'll give you time to think about it this time, David. So why why don't we go to Rachel, first of all?
Oh, goodness. So I think in a year, Boris Johnson will still be Prime Minister just, but I think there'll be a lot of grumbles about him. There'll be a lot of plotting. There'll be letters will have gone in to the Graham Brady. Is it still Graham Brady? There'll be all kinds of stories about how long will he last. Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss will be absolutely in full manoeuvres in tanks and sliders and everything. And it'll be full on major leadership from about March onwards. Plot, plot, plot. But I think he might still hang on for another year, but maybe not until the election.
Very good. Danny?
So the problem with predicting when Boris Johnson or if Boris Johnson will go is it's not linear. If it was just, as Rachel said, that it basically depends on him becoming somewhat more unpopular and more unpopular, and then eventually enough letters go in, then there's a vote of confidence and he doesn't win it, then that would be relatively easy to predict. The problem with him is it could happen literally tomorrow or it could never happen, because he'll basically fall down a hole is the way that Boris Johnson will go, in my view. And that makes it extremely difficult to predict. Thus, definitely the safest thing to predict is that in a year's time, we'll still have the same leader of the opposition and the same prime minister. But the problem with Boris right from the beginning has been this accident prone nature. He does not have the same insulation that other prime ministers have, where when something happens the integrity is questioned, the prime minister gets the benefit of the doubt. And that is usually what would happen, and he doesn't have that, and I think therefore he's extremely vulnerable to political accident, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if such a political accident befell him in the year. But you certainly can't predict it, because it's so it's one of these kind of surprise things that will happen. We'll wake up one morning and will happen.
Libby, your prediction for 2022?
I think a couple of things will happen. I mean, as I say, nobody knows at all about the politics and the Prime Minister. I think there's going to be quite a serious backlash against the whole sort of cancelling people for wrong think and so on. I think that we're coming to the end of a kind of wave of all that. And I think that will end. I think the other thing is we're going to have variant after variant after variant, right through to Omega. And people are going to pay less and less and less attention to it. It's going to be harder and harder and harder to enforce any kind of different public behaviour. And so that'll be interesting. I'm quite optimistic, actually. I sort of feel that we've all been shaken up a great deal over a couple of years, and it's usually quite good to shake people up and shake lives up. And of course there are casualties which are awful, but the deaths and people's lives and jobs and some, but the shaking up of everything, the shaking up of attitudes and people being forced to think about what they want governments to do, what they want governments to be like, what they want public institutions to be like, what they want the NHS to be like, what they demand of it, what your relationship is with the NHS, all these things. I think it's, we'll have grown interestingly through the next year. I look forward to it.
Melanie, your prediction for next year?
Well, there won't be a Scottish referendum, even though Sturgeon says she's going to call one in the autumn. And I think that the chances of them being one for a long time, while Boris Johnson is there, and I absolutely agree, he's the greased piglet, isn't he? He will continue to survive. So he's the best. He's the best thing that the SNP have got going for them at the moment. If they lose him, then it might be interesting.
Alice, then.
I think that the Tory backbenchers and the Tory MPs are just more ruthless than everyone else thinks. I think they will get rid of Boris. I think he's slid pretty far just in a few weeks. And I think having shared an office with him and a paper and seen him quite often, I think he is someone who gets away with it for a long time, but then suddenly doesn't anymore. I don't think it'll stop him getting his column. I think that's why he is constantly sucking up to his former employers, because he would rather like to go back to being a newspaper columnist. And that was one of my problems with him being prime minister, is I think he gives newspaper columnists such a terrible name as politicians, because they're just not very good at being prime minister.
Yeah, his columns were great. His columns were very good.
Peppa Pig was a great column. That's what it was. It was a column, but it was absolutely nothing else. It would have been a great first half of the column. He'd have filed it at 10 to 7. It'd have taken him half an hour to write. And everyone would have thought, oh, God, great, you know, funny, entertaining, and we love you, Boris. And actually, it doesn't work as a prime minister. And I don't think any of us would be particularly good, putting my neck out here. Maybe Danny, obviously, because you're very...
Danny, yeah.
But I just think columnists don't, because they're thinking of interest, they're thinking of jokes, they're thinking of entertainment, they're trying to inform, but they're not actually coming up with all the solutions, which is what you need to be, or being, or reading all the briefs all the time, or having to choose a staff underneath them, that we don't do that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's what Boris isn't good at. He's not going to have many staff left in number 10. He hasn't got many people who you think could lead, but then we didn't when we got John Major, and, you know, we didn't really with David Cameron until the leadership campaign started. You never really know who's going to come from where, actually. So I think we will have a leadership challenge next year. And I think it'll just be interesting who's in it and who isn't.
Very good. Right. I've done everyone, haven't I, apart from David?
No, exactly.
So I've given you plenty of time. So this better be really good. Your prediction for 2022.
Well, I think what Boris Johnson has done is what you might call, for the older people here, a reverse Dick Emery. You know, Dick Emery used to say, you're awful, but I like you. And now people are saying to him, you're awful, and I really can't stand you. And that is a real kind of difficulty. I mean, I can't remember who it was which got a great American general, somebody else might know, said that you can go into a place and be a nice a bastard and then prove yourself a nice guy, but you can't go in somewhere and, as a nice guy, and prove that you're a nasty guy. And I think that's kind of pretty much what has happened to Johnson. And I don't think that's coming back. And I think, therefore, Danny's right, that he's waiting to fall down the next big hole that opens up. And the only thing you can be relatively sure is the hole will open up and so on, and that he may very well regard the game as not being worth the candle and so on. And anyway, he's got time to fit another child in during the course of next year and so on. So it's not at all impossible that the pressure of being a father who doesn't get to see his family is so great that, as the saying goes, he needs to resign to spend more time with his families. So I think that I do think that is a real possibility during the course of next year. The other thing I want to predict is that there will be a Scottish referendum, not because I think there will be, but because if there isn't, no one will remember that I said there was going to be. And if there is one, I can write a column saying I predicted last year that there will be a referendum in Scotland. And look what happened.
That's cheating.
And that's the problem with columnists as prime ministers, you see.
Yeah, exactly. It proves the point.
As if we needed further evidence of why David shouldn't be prime minister. Which Times columnist would make the best prime minister?
Trevor Phillips.
Trevor Phillips, says Libby. Very good. Melanie?
Giles Corrigan.
Melanie's completely...
Chancellor of the Exchequer for Giles, I think. Almost.
Yeah, I think so. Danny?
So I've tried to make one of the other Times columnists into the Prime Minister.
William Hague.
Is William Hague. So clearly we have amongst us somebody whom I think would be, you know, people here may disagree with his politics, or they may not, but I certainly found him a very impressive person to work for, so he's my choice.
A bit of a cheat.
Oh, honestly.
Go on, David.
I mean, one would suggest Danny, of course one would, but you
was
would
that insufficiently require... fatuous for
but,
you, David?
But you would, yeah, it really was. And also, it was you just being nicey about everybody, which I've told you about before. I've tried to stop you, but nothing will prevent you. Danny, I think you'd make not a bad out of us. You'd make the best prime minister. You probably don't think you would, but I think you would, but in the German style. In other words, you would be calm and you would be sensible and you wouldn't be over theatrical. It's not because you can't be theatrical. You can be very funny, etc. So I would nominate you. But that sounds so appalling that I think this whole section should be cut out before broadcast ever see the light of day.
But if Danny does become, or we choose him as our Prime Minister, then we have to get Nicola Jill in the magazine to dress him up as Angela Merkel, because I think actually, Danny, you're quite Angela Merkel-esque. I think you'd be very good at that. Yeah.
I'm not sure whether to take this as a compliment or not.
I want to put a word in for William Hague, because actually he would be ideal at the comment bash the other night. He spent the whole evening talking about judo holds, because I used to do judo and he used to do judo. And we were comparing the different judo holds. And so I know that he is a man who at least knows how to fall gracefully.
We've seen him do it after the 2001 election.
Well, you can fall, you fall and then you rise again. And you can use the other person's weakness, the other person's strength against them by hurling them over your head with your foot in their stomach. We were discussing that a lot.
I hope they play Chumbawamba, cut it in to that bit of what you've just been saying, etc. Because that was going to be my nomination for Christmas song, which you never asked about and which I spent ages thinking about.
But it's not a Christmas song, though, is it, Chumbawamba?
Oh, don't give me that. Anything can be a Christmas song if you sing it at Christmas.
Which Chumbawamba song?
Top Stomp, presumably, yeah.
But I'm not allowed to sing it because it's got that word in it that Matt doesn't like and accuses me of being potty-mouthed if I do say it.
Which one? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're not allowed to say that.
You've just bleeped it out. If you put it in, you've bleeped it out.
Can we have a consensus candidate for which columnist would make a prime minister and have that as Matt?
No, that would be a terrible idea.
What would he be? Okay, if he's not going to be Prime Minister, Matt in a government? What department?
I think that would be
a
good part. The problem with making Matt Prime Minister is who would do the 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock slot on Times Radio?
Well, he would.
Warren.
That's much harder to fill.
We call it PMQs. What would you like to be? What would you most like to be, Matt? If you were in government, you had to be in government. So I'm going to give you one of the cabinet portfolios.
Matt would actually have to be culture minister, actually, you know, the DCMS, but sort of take the media and sport out of it and just do
it. I'm not sure I've got the towering intellect of the current occupant of that portfolio.
I can imagine you, and I'm a celebrity, though, Matt.
Thank you. Again, I'm not sure I've completely lost control of all of this. Given that we've all agreed that Danny is going to be our Prime Minister, Danny, do you want to address the nation and wish them all a very happy Christmas?
Yes, thank you. Don't I have to have one of those little signs that come up before I say anything? And I have to pre-record it as well, obviously. But everyone, I hope you have a very Merry Christmas.
And so ends our Columnists Focus Group. On the podcast tomorrow, all this year, we've been picking through all 55 Prime Ministers with Andrew Jimson, because 2021 was the 300th anniversary of Robert Walpole becoming our first Prime Minister. So on the podcast tomorrow, we're going to take a look at all of the most recent Prime Ministers, from Thatcher to Johnson. So make sure you don't miss that.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.